Listen up, all of you Mandarin, Cantonese, Russian speakers, Japanese speakers, and speakers of Slovak languages.
You are now listening to the IELTS podcast.
Today I've got a pronunciation expert, and she's from Australia. She's a speech pathologist. I'm very pleased, and she's joining us from Star Pronunciation. Very good course I've heard for students who want to improve their pronunciation. So that's at starpronunciation.com. Welcome to the podcast, Georgina. How are you?
Thanks, Ben. I'm really well.
Great. Okay. Could you just tell us a bit about yourself and about your qualifications and about Star Pronunciation as well?
Absolutely. So look, basically I did a course in speech pathology where we learn all about pronunciation and also communication. And after my course, I specialised in accents and English pronunciation. And I worked with people one-on-one for around 10 years, all people from non-English speaking backgrounds who wanted to speak English more clearly. Mm-hmm. So some of these students found that they were unclear, and some of them just wanted to neutralise their accents so they sounded more like an English native speaker. And most of the time they wanted to do this for work purposes or for improving their pronunciation for IELTS score and for study. So I did that face-to-face for around 10 years, which was fantastic. I did it in groups and I did it individually. And a couple of years ago, I had really long waiting lists and I had a lot of people ringing me from, you know, other parts of Australia and New Zealand, and people saying, you know, I want to come and I want to take your training. And I thought, look, it's time to move all of our training online. So I spent a couple of years, took mm-hmm. me a lot longer than I had originally planned, uh-huh. took me over 2 years to move all of our programs onto the internet and onto video training tutorials. So basically I've created different courses for speakers of different languages, because for pronunciation it's really important that you have training that is you know, specifically for your needs as a speaker of a certain language. So people who speak Mandarin will do a different course to someone who speaks Russian or Korean, for example. So we've been doing that for a couple of years now, and our students are mainly, you know, based in Australia and the UK, but they're all around the world as well. And we're getting great feedback, and it's really exciting. And we, you know, have email contact and phone contact with our students as well. So that's what we're up to.
Wow, that sounds great. Fantastic. That's awesome. And while you were talking, you said something, neutralize the accents. That sounded interesting. Yeah. Could you just expand a bit on that, please?
Yeah, sure. So basically, some people, when they are learning some people when they're learning English find that they have difficulty pronouncing some sounds in English, and also maybe have difficulty with the rhythms and the stresses, and this gives them a really strong accent. Mm-hmm. And they might find that that's making some of their speech unclear. So some people are, you know, asking them to repeat themselves, or just sometimes they're getting a blank look, mm-hmm. and they can tell that the listener has not easily understood them. And so those people will want to lessen that accent and become more clear. And that's basically about neutralizing. So we're bringing people more towards they're making their speech more like an English native speaker. So it's easier for listeners to understand.
I see. Do you have a system or a procedure to bring it in line, to bring it nearer to a native speaker?
Yeah. So I guess the first step is always an assessment, or helping the student understand which areas of their pronunciation need to be changed. Mm-hmm. In English, you know, there's quite a few areas that are really important for speech clarity, mm-hmm. and they are rate of speech, volume of speech, the way that you move your mouth. They're also, the sounds are really, really important. So vowel sounds and consonant sounds, and also the stresses and rhythms and the way that we use the pitch and the tone of the voice in English. Right. So I guess the first step is really working out, well, which areas of the of pronunciation does the student need to change or need to correct in order to make, you know, to make them more correctly, to make them So definitely that's the first step. And then after that, there's definitely systems. We need to, you know, help the student make the sounds and the speech patterns correctly. And then we give them loads and loads and loads of practice and way to get confident with using their new speech sound and new speech patterns, you know, while they're practicing, but really most importantly, while they're out and about in their everyday life or in an IELTS exam.
Right. Okay. I've got two questions. The first one, you said that there were quite a few different areas for English speakers. For non-native speakers who want to speak English. I think the first one you said, was it rate or speed or pitch? Which one was it? You gave a list. You said
the first one that I always talk about is rate or speed of speech.
Just as a general tip, would you recommend speakers who are having difficulty being understood just to slow down? That's a good technique to start off with from the base, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And I often have students that speak quite quickly, and they might do this because they speak quickly in their first language, or they might be doing this to sound more fluent in English.
Mm.
And often when non-native speakers speed up, their pronunciation changes a little bit. So what happens is their vowels become shorter and their pitch becomes even flatter and their pronunciation gets a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. So I do often recommend that people slow down, take their time, and often they will find that their pronunciation improves, but often other things improve too, like their grammar and word choice. Mm-hmm. So my first port of call, the first thing I always check with them is, are they using a good rate of speech? Or are they speaking too fast? Yep.
Right. Yeah. I've discovered similar things because here in Spain, the locals, especially in the region where I live, they speak incredibly fast in their own language, and they try and maintain this speed when they speak in English. And it ends up really, really difficult to understand because, as you said, the vowel sounds, they change. The word choice isn't the optimum word choice, and it becomes a real stress and difficult, and it's really difficult to understand them. So the first part of call, I just tell them to slow down, and it's exactly what happens, just what you said. The word choice increases and the clarity improves, and altogether there's the whole message can be understood, the communication improves. And
that's
the
right.
Second part of call, which was the second part of call?
Yep.
The first was speed or rate, and then the second?
The second one that I usually check is volume. So making sure that the person's using a voice that's loud enough to be easily understood. Mm-hmm. Some people, when they're speaking in English, kind of lack confidence, and they might, you know, make their speech a little bit quieter. And often, often students say to me, "Oh, when I don't know a word in English, I just say it really quietly and really quickly, and hope that the listener will, you know, understand." And that's the worst thing that they can do. So really, they need to, you know, give the listener all the help that they can, and slow it down, and say it clearly, and give the listener time. And so using a good volume is so important. And these are things that are important for native speakers too.
Of course, yes.
Obviously, you know, speaking too fast and speaking not loud enough is really a problem. So mm-hmm. if you do speak quietly, lots of practice using a louder voice.
Yes. It's got so many more advantages as well if you just speak louder. You know, you appear
That's
more
right.
confident, and it's clearer, it's more effective as well.
That's right.
And the third point, which was the third point?
Yeah. So the third point is the way that you move your mouth when you speak English. So I often find that non-native speakers will use a mouth position that's similar to their first language. Mm. So I have a lot of Mandarin speakers, for example, or Japanese speakers or Russian speakers that use a very closed mouth position. Now, this is a problem because in English we have a lot of open sounds. We have sounds like or and ah and and O that need us to open and move our mouths. If you try and make those sounds with a, you know, without moving your jaw, it means that they'll be quite unclear. So I always say to people, you know, move your mouth, start to open and double check that you're, you know, that you are moving and opening your mouth. Because if I spoke English like this with my mouth closed, so I'll just repeat that. If I spoke English like that with my mouth closed, it's really unclear. And I find a lot of them are actually doing what we call mumbling. So, you know, that's a really easy, quick thing that people can do to improve.
And I imagine they could do this by looking in the mirror and seeing and physically checking if they are opening their mouth to the sounds.
Absolutely.
I see.
Yeah, definitely.
And a good teacher as well would spot that they have to ask the student to open the mouth and just spot that the mouth is closed while they're speaking.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So checking in the mirror is a really good idea. And also, you know, I encourage students to pick a native English speaker that they think speaks really well. So it might be Barack Obama or, you know, somebody that speaks really well. It might be a news reader. And have a look at their mouth. You'll notice that you can often see their tongue and inside their mouth. And that's, you know, that's what we're aiming for. We're opening, you know, good opening and good movement of the mouth. So, yeah,
it
makes a big difference.
And in your course, if you found that a student had that specific problem, do you give them a list of words to read and to pronounce until it's perfect? Is that how you would work?
Yeah. So really what we do is we give students some sentences and things to practice and words. But in our course, we tend to identify which vowels are difficult for the student, and we encourage them to, you know, practice opening and moving their mouths while they're working on these other areas as well. So, definitely. Look, you know, listening and repeating and becoming more aware of those is definitely something that's part of the course.
Could you just give me like the top three mistakes? If I give you maybe three or four nationalities,
sure.
If you could give me the top four mistakes and how they could improve that, would that
absolutely
be okay?
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds good.
Awesome. Great. Okay, let's go. Let's first start with Spanish speakers.
Yes, sure. Okay. So Spanish speakers, now, I do get a bit excited, so I might give you more than three or four, sorry. But really, Spanish speakers, most of my Spanish speakers, I would be encouraging to work on word stress. So where we put the emphasis in a multi-syllable word in English. Mm. Spanish speakers tend to use very flat pitch or flat tone. Mm-hmm. So they would tend to make words quite flat. In English, we need to stress one syllable, and that's so important for speaking clearly. If you use flat word stress, it means that the listener will have difficulty understanding you. Mm. So that would be one area that I definitely recommend for Spanish speakers. The other...
Sorry to interrupt, Georgina. Yeah. Could you give me an example?
Sure, absolutely. So let's take the word, for example, necessary. Okay, now a Spanish speaker would tend to put even stress on each syllable. They would say necessary. Mm-hmm. So the stress sounds like da 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 da. Da 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 da. Now when a native speaker says that, we put all of the stress on the first syllable, necessary. So the stress sounds like this. La 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 la. Mm. La 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 la. Necessary. Okay.
Yes.
Now, some people might find that hard to hear. Okay. It does take a little bit of practice to hear the pitch of the voice. And this might be something that students have never thought about before.
Mm-hmm.
But it is hugely important for speaking clearly. It's actually one of the most important areas that affects how easily native speakers recognize a word.
And a good way to teach this would be to exaggerate it when you actually speak it.
Yeah, yep, mm-hmm. to become more aware of the up and down of the voice when native speakers are speaking. And also, you know, really focusing on where the emphasis is in multi-syllable words. You can use the international phonetic alphabet in the dictionary to check that.
Mm-hmm.
But listening to the music of English is really, really helpful for when improving your word stress.
A teacher just a while back, she said she spoke about the song of English. That's how she described it. She'd studied music and she'd realized that there's English has a certain song to it. Okay, so what was another area for Spanish speakers?
So another area would be, say, vowel sounds, for example. So Spanish speakers, in Spanish, there are only short vowels. So you've got o, at, as an example. Mm-hmm. Now, in English, we have the vowel O, so often, which is a double vowel. So the vowel O actually has two mouth positions. It has O and then U. If I join them together, it makes the vowel O, like in the word phone. Now, a native speaker of Spanish would often say phone instead of phone. So they use a short vowel there instead of a double vowel.
Right.
And that's, yeah, vowel sounds are important.
Sorry, can I just check? With O,
yeah.
You said there's two sounds. There's the O as in, oh my God, for example.
Well, that would be the double vowel. That would be the diphthong. So, the sound O in phone can be broken down into two parts.
Mm.
The first part is O with an open big circle of the lips,
mm-hmm.
and the second part of that vowel is then U. So the lips move from O to U.
And then a third point that Spanish
a third point, sure, would be, say, for example, the sound V, like in the words very and Victor.
Mm.
So many Spanish speakers confuse the sounds V and B. So they might say berry instead of very, or they might say November instead of November. Mm. So that would be a third area that would be a problem for Spanish speakers.
For Farsi speakers?
Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. So for Farsi speakers, again, they tend to use quite flat stress or incorrect stress. So, for mm-hmm. example, a Farsi speaker might say product instead of product. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They would tend to use incorrect stress in a lot of English words. So I would be recommending and helping them to use correct word stress and correct stress across a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
They also make some of the long and double vowels in English too short. So, for example, the double vowel A, which is the vowel E and then the vowel E smoothly joined together, A, mm-hmm. they would tend to make shorter. So in a word like pain, it might sound a little bit more like pen. So I would be working on some vowel sounds with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a third area would be often Farsi speakers have difficulty with the sounds V and W. So where the Spanish speaker confused the sound V, so V with B, the Farsi mm-hmm. speaker confuses the sounds V and W. So they might say wary instead of very, or they might say aware instead of aware. So they confuse V and W there. So they would be three of the things that I would work on, amongst other things, with a speaker of Farsi or Persian.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. And the final group I'd like to ask you would be Chinese.
Right, great. So we have a lot of Mandarin and Cantonese speakers in our courses. Word stress and sentence stress is a really important area. Mm-hmm. Often Mandarin speakers have learnt at school where the stress is in a word, but they haven't had a lot of practice with actually using it. So they have the knowledge there, which is great. They know often where the stress is in a word, but when it actually comes to using it, they often use stress that's a little bit flatter than a native speaker. So they might say a word like realize. They might say it more like realize, very flat. Mm. So I would be again working with them on improving their pronunciation of word stress and their use of sentence stress. Vowel sounds as well. They often have difficulties with the diphthong vowels A and O like the other speakers, but often the vowel E is a little bit too short as well.
Mm.
So they might say things like speak instead of speak and wick instead of weak. Yeah, and with regards to consonant sounds, often they have a little bit of difficulty with word endings, so pronouncing the endings in their words. And most speakers of Asian languages do need to often improve this a little bit. So, for example, a word like bike, they might say bye. Or a word like face, they might leave the end sound off and say fay. And this often means that they have difficulty making past tense endings correctly. So they might say things like work instead of worked,
yeah,
or instead of missed. So word endings is another area,
mm-hmm.
as well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the word endings is it's incredibly important because if you get that wrong, you get the tense wrong, and it's going to damage the what you want to say incredibly.
Exactly. And it's often a really obvious mistake to people when people don't use correct word endings and also correct past tense endings and correct plural endings. If people leave those off, it's very obvious, and it makes the speaker, it can leave a poor impression of somebody's English skills.
Yeah, so it's even more important in exam situation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, is there a way a student can get that under control so they don't make these mistakes?
Yeah, look, absolutely. There are lots of things that you can do, and I think, the first step is really becoming very aware of your pronunciation. It's really important to get to know your own pronunciation. Start to listen very carefully. Most people up until a certain point have really been focusing on what they're saying, not how they're saying it. So I encourage people when they make the decision, oh, okay, pronunciation's something I need to work on. They really need to start to focus on how they're speaking and how they're making sounds and using the pitch and tone of their voice. So it's the first thing they should do. And there's quite a few things that they can do to improve that. And one of them is recording their own speech. So I do recommend that people record their speech and listen to it and become more familiar with the sounds that they're making or not making, so they can really get a feel for what areas of pronunciation they have difficulty with. And at this point, a lot of my students say, but I record my speech and I don't know, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do next. I can't hear my parents. And I've actually created a tool on our website where people can record their speech and compare it to a native speaker.
I
Um,
see.
so that might be helpful for people.
And when they do that comparison, is it
Yeah.
a visual comparison with like the chat, or is it just an audio comparison?
Yep, so it is at this stage an audio comparison. So what the student will be doing is recording this each sound in English by itself and in words and listening to the native speaker. And I think it's really helpful at this stage to actually just use audio. I find a lot of students rely on visual things, whereas really for pronunciation, yes, it is about the movement of the mouth, but when we're getting to know pronunciation and when we're asking you to become aware of listening to your errors, it is important to really focus on the audio and how it sounds in order to then understand which areas you need to improve. Obviously, when it comes to changing that, you will need some visual help, and definitely you'll need to be able to see somebody's mouth to get the right positions of the mouth and tongue. But when it comes to actually becoming aware of, hey, what am I doing? What do I need to change? I think we need to focus on, what does it sound like? And that will really improve your listening skills as well.
I was going to say it's good training for your
Yes.
ear as well, for your audio skills. It's
That's
which is
right.
which is extremely important when you're learning any language. Now,
Yeah.
another point you said, I think it was around the time you said you were talking about neutralizing the accent. You also mentioned that they need lots and lots and lots of practice. So recording themselves and doing the comparisons, are there any other ways a student could practice to get their pronunciation up to scratch?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I think, the biggest thing when you're working on improving your spoken English is to try to speak as much as you can. Often when I ask students, so, what are you doing to improve your spoken English? They say things like listening to podcasts, watching TV, watching movies. Now, that's all great, but you need to speak if you're going to improve spoken English. So really, my first step is always to say, try to increase the amount of English that you're speaking every day. Okay, increase it by 15 minutes, half an hour a day. Even if you're speaking out loud to yourself, that's a really good start because a lot of people, don't have anybody to practice with. I don't have any, you know, any native speakers I can just go and chat to. Well, that's okay. Speak out loud to yourself. And what I do recommend is that, you know, I think with pronunciation, it is important to realize that you probably will need some specialized help in the area. Now, there's obviously lots of things that you can do to improve your pronunciation, whether it be YouTube videos, books and CDs, or whether you choose to do a, you know, a comprehensive online course like ours. There's lots of things, but really what you need to be looking at is finding something that gives you lots and lots and lots of practice and lots of ideas for how you can, you know, become confident with using your new speech skills, not just when you're sitting in front of the computer practicing, but also when you're out in your everyday life speaking to your friends and your colleagues and also practicing for IELTS exams.
Great advice, Steph. Thank you, Georgie. That is great. I've just got a few other questions now. Do you know any of any powerful drills a student could do? Like maybe a list of words or something like that, which they could just do constantly to get all those words under control?
Yeah, sure. Look, there are... Basically, I have one drill that I suggest that everybody does in the morning to get their mouths moving for English. Okay, so it's really more something to help get their mouth into English mode. I think that it's really important with English to, before doing drills to improve vowels and consonants, you know, I think you need to really have some good teaching to make sure that you're making the sounds correctly and make sure that you have the awareness to check that you're making them correctly before you just start repeating lists and, you know, doing listen and repeat exercises.
Right.
So my drill that I recommend that everybody does in the morning when they wake up, listen up, all of you Mandarin, Cantonese, Russian speakers, Japanese speakers, and speakers of Slovak languages. they really need it. I recommend that when you get out of bed in the morning, you say this sentence 5 times, opening and moving your mouth and your lips and your jaw. I recommend you say, I saw 66 farmers laughing on the phone.
Right. Okay. I saw 66 farmers laughing on the phone. Right.
Excellent. And you moved your mouth really well then, Ben. I could
hear
that opening and moving your mouth. You got all the sounds in 66. Okay. So we need to, you know, work in English. We need to be good at making consonant sounds one after the other. And a lot of Asian speakers of Asian languages would find that quite challenging. So, for example, a speaker of Vietnamese or Thai might say sik-ti-sik, or they might say sik-sik. They tend to have difficulty making consonant clusters one after the other. So really feel the sounds as you say it and open your jaw and your mouth. I saw 66 farmers laughing on the phone. You should feel your jaw opening and try it in front of the mirror and make sure that you're opening and closing your jaw. But as for drills on specific sounds, you know, you really need to be making sure that you have the mouth position for the sound correct before you go using it in a drill or doing listen and repeat exercises. So there's a few steps involved that I would recommend that people take before they start practicing words and sentences in drills.
The steps would be first get the sounds of the consonants and the vowels under control. And
that's right.
Then possibly progress into sentences and words, but it would be in that order, first the sounds, then the words, not at the same time or...
No. Think of it like going from crawling to running.
Yeah.
So, you know, words are broken down into smaller sections called sounds, and, you know, if you're getting a sound incorrect, we need to correct your position first. When, say, for example, it is the sound V that you're having difficulty with, we need to make sure that you're 100% confident with how to position your mouth to make the sound V. Then we would put that into a word, practice it in a word, because that's the next step. And then we need to practice it in a phrase. And that's often a big jump for people. Often they can make it correctly in a word, but when they go to put it into a phrase or a sentence, wow, things go back to where they were before. So really need to take each step, you know, and work up the ladder there. And often I find that a problem that people something that's not right that people do is when they're practicing pronunciation, they might just practice the sound in a word and over and over, and then they expect that when they're out in their IELTS exam that they will be able to say it correctly in free speech. Now, you know, there's quite a few steps in between there. We need to practice it in phrases. We need to practice it in sentences. We need to practice it in free speech then. Mm-hmm. So there's a few steps involved.
Yeah.
It's not easy as just understanding the sound. Yeah.
Okay, I see. Yeah, it's like a lot of things. If you once you get involved, once you get deeper into the subject, you realize there's a lot more components than appears from outside. And the way to get control of this is to break it down into its tiny components and take it step by step. Instead of jumping to the obvious, just break it down and get the basics under control and then build from that good foundation.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, I often recommend that students just choose one or two areas to work on first with their pronunciation. So identify two areas or one that they have difficulty with and work on that first. I think some people try and work on, you know, lots of things at the one time, and that's just too much. You know, changing pronunciation does take quite a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you said, breaking it down into smaller steps is really important.
Yeah, it takes a lot of practice, but the return on investment is incredible because suddenly you're understood and your effectiveness in communication, it maybe goes from 60 to 80-90%. Also, the way you speak and the pronunciation, it tells a lot about the person you are as well, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing that we keep hearing from our clients is that it really affects confidence. If people are not confident with the way they're pronouncing, it affects the way that they are, you know, the way that they speak and the way they communicate. And, you know, we really find that when people improve in their confidence with speaking, it really is quite life-changing. It has a big effect, and they find just they grow in confidence and everything gets easier. You know, you think of how many times we speak during the day, and if somebody is worried every time that they speak whether they're going to be understood or not, and they lack confidence with their pronunciation, it just has a huge effect. So, yeah, that's right. It really makes a massive difference. www.starpronunciation.com, and we do have 5 free video tips which we'd love you to sign up to. It's a really great starting point for people who are wanting to start to think about these areas and, you know, and start to improve their English pronunciation and speech clarity. So you can do that at our website. Sign up for the 5 free tips and email me anytime if you have any questions.
Thanks for listening to IELTSpodcast.com. And remember to leave your email for updates.